May it please the court, Raphael Taylor on behalf of the intervener appellant Angela Ashford. This case is about identifying the members of decedent's family, more specifically, whether the decedent had any surviving biological children. One of the reasons why this is important is because, well, let's just state it, the decedent preferred the company of men. But he wasn't public about this.
The possibility that the decedent was gay doesn't rule out the possibility that he was Quincy Jones' biological father, does it? Many, many gay men have children.
Your Honor, that's an excellent point. And it ties into the fact that in this particular case, the decedent held himself out to be the father of numerous children. However, when we're looking at a biological question, it would appear that the best way to answer that question would be with a DNA test.
But the problem is, under this Illinois Parentage Act, it creates a conclusive presumption of paternity when a man voluntarily accepts a child as his own, holds him out as his biological child. And that's what he did here, and we have that document.
Your Honor, the first thing that I'd like to say in response to that is, when you make reference to the document, it is incomplete. The document that is part of the record is a two-page document. The first page says page 1 of 4. The second page says page 3 of 4. There are no other pages to the document. When it makes reference to the fact that the decedent signed the document, because it's incomplete, you can't tell in what capacity he signed the document. I can get back to that in a moment, but to get back to the first part of your question, the Parentage Act, the purpose of which is to provide for the care of illegitimate children and prevent them from becoming wards of the state. In this case, that had already been accomplished. We're not talking about Mr. Jones, the first defendant, as someone who is still a child, still in need of care. We're talking about a grown man. So
but
at this point of time,
isn't there good reason for courts to be reluctant to order DNA testing in these situations where you have, as my sister Judge Williams noted, an unchallenged parentage order and a long history of a parental relationship, and frankly, where money gives people an incentive to raise doubts about the fact whether a potential heir was or was not the biological offspring?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, Your Honor, I believe that the response still sits the same in that the obligation to the defendant, Mr. Jones, was met. We are, again, not talking about a child who is still in need of support. So we're not going back and reversing any of the actions that the decedent took. He still provided care for the child when he was a child. He still lived with him at some point in time. He still provided all of these functions for him. None of that is being taken away in this action. What we're dealing with now is what happens now that Mr. Jones is an adult.
But that's still, you do face the fact that the Illinois law places a heavy burden on anyone who wants the DNA case. So let me ask you, the evidence that your client provided the sister, is it just her say-so? Is there anything else?
The short answer to your question is the items in the record are the evidence. So in other words, was there something that, for
well,
example...
Well, she had a friend, who also said that the father was homosexual, didn't she?
That's correct.
But, and is that it? There's no other, no arrest record or anything? Or?
No. It's just the two affidavits, the tax returns, and the letters, well, the letters from
the
registrar.
Oh, the tax returns showing the different children, you mean?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask, was the murder of the father ever solved?
No, Your Honor. It's actually... The specific answer to your question is that it is an ongoing investigation.
It's still?
Yes. No. According to if I may, my most recent conversation with the chief of police in Harvey. Uh-huh. It is an ongoing investigation. Uh-huh. Now, in this case, the district court incorrectly applied Jark v. Mondry in deciding the matter. Now, Jark focused on the presumption of legitimacy and the preservation of the family, as opposed to parentage. Obviously, this is different from the case that we have before us now, because there's no question at all as to legitimacy. That's the reason why we have a Parentage Act. And there's also no issue with regards to the preservation of family, because we don't have that in this case either.
Now, is there any reference to a mother?
I'm sorry?
Well, Quincy Jones must have had a mother. So, do we know anything about the mother?
Well, Your Honor, what we have in terms of the record is her signature on, again, that incomplete order that I made reference to. I mean, there may be more information, but from what we have in the record, yes, there was obviously a mother of the case. And, you know, I can't speak to it specifically, but it might have been her claim, or probably was her claim since she filed the case.
Oh, so her name is known, the mother's name?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
But she hasn't submitted any evidence or anything?
Nothing specific for this case. Your Honor, if I may, I see that I'm going into my rebuttal time. Would you like me to continue, or how would you like to proceed?
Oh, you can continue.
Thank you.
We'll give you rebuttal time. That's okay.
Thank you. So in answer to your question, in terms of this case, what I see in terms of the record is that mom filed an action against the decedent, and a judgment was entered. Dad, or the decedent, did provide child support, things of that nature for the child. I hope that answers your question. Mm-hmm. If not, please just give me a little bit of a clue. And I'll...
But she didn't name him as the father or a mother.
I'm sorry, when you say she didn't name him?
As the father on the birth certificate.
Your Honor, there's nothing in the record with regards to a birth certificate, which also distinguishes this from Mondry, where they did have a birth certificate. They had deposition testimony from mom saying, this is the father of this child. Those are the things that I'm trying to bring to the court's attention, because I believe
they are key. Well, you wouldn't be here. I mean, that would be pretty conclusive, wouldn't you?
Yes. Now, the other thing that I'd like to point out is that Jones, the child Jones, if we can call him that to distinguish, placed his biological relationship with the decedent at issue in this matter, as he challenged Annie Moore's relationship. And going back, the interpleader action that basically started this at the federal level basically stated that they had received two claims, one from Jones, one from Moore. Moore's claim was basically that she deserved a portion of the insurance policy proceeds. Jones's claim is that he deserved all of the proceeds, that Moore was not her sister, she's not related to the decedent, all the money should come to me. So when we come back to the issue of the district court saying, well, the courts have traditionally said we don't like to see one decedent trying to disinherit the other, the reason why we're here, in my humble opinion, Your Honor, is because Jones started this matter by saying, you're not my sister, you're not my father's child,
DNA proved that, didn't it?
Yes, but the point, Your Honor, is that he asked for that. He said, prove who you are. He said, prove who you are. It didn't start with Annie Moore saying, okay, Quincy, you prove who you are, and then we'll see where it goes. Her answer and interpleader was, okay, just give me my portion. She had even, if you look to the record, in her response to the initial paperwork from the insurance company, wrote a letter that said, you know, I'm the daughter of the decedent, you know, he always provided support, so there's no court documents, and Quincy is my brother.
I have some vague impression that Quincy was at some point suspected of being involved in the murder?
Yes, Your Honor. There is information in the record, in the notes from the insurance company, that speak to that effect. I can't say anything more with regards to that because, unfortunately, well, I'm sure with good reason, the police won't give any details since it's an ongoing investigation. I see I'm now out of time. should I just step back and we'll,
or yes, do you have anything else for me? Yes, and I'll give you more time after we hear from your opponent.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hickey?
May it please.
And you can raise.
Thank you, Lord.
So just a sort of a technical thing, why does the record only contain two of the four pages of the parentage order? Is that all there was that was before the district court?
Your Honor, I did not obtain the order, and in answer to your question, I can't tell you that that was all that was before the district court. When I did look at the record, that page 3 contains the certificate of the clerk of the circuit court indicating that they certified on the last page, page 3. which would suggest to me, Your Honor, that maybe page 2 and page 4 were the reverse sides of a form order which contain other instructions, and that that page 3 was, in fact, the last page of the order in the court file.
Suppose Ms. Ashford presented one or more affidavits indicating that the decedent had made remarks to close friends or family members indicating that Mr. Jones was not his biological son. Would that have changed things here?
No, Your Honor. Those would still have been hearsay evidence, as in Jarkey. That did not happen here. Even if it had, that would still be hearsay evidence. It wouldn't rise to the level to defeat the parentage order. There was no indication, no evidence that the decedent, Leonard Jones, had ever disavowed Quincy as his son.
What about all these adopted children? I mean, the different children appearing on the different 1040. That's puzzling.
Your Honor, the trial court viewed those documents and stated the fact that Quincy Jones was listed on at least some of those documents indicated that the decedent Leonard Jones did hold Quincy out as his son.
Had all these other kids also, and
none of the other children were before the court. None of the other children.
No, but
filed.
He didn't have so many children, did he? I mean,
Your Honor, what makes Quincy different is the parentage order.
I see. So he can get parentage orders for any of the other?
That's correct, Your Honor. And as to Quincy Jones's mother, on the parentage order, on page 2, Quincy Jones signed the parentage order. The mother, Nona Crawford, was the plaintiff in the parentage action. Her signature appears directly below Leonard Jones, the decedent father's signature. So we don't have her testifying at the trial. We don't have an affidavit from her. We do have the fact that she is the plaintiff in the parentage action, that she did sign that parentage order, which indicated that Leonard Jones was the father of Quincy
Jones.
Why
should an individual be able to inherit when there is some indication that they may not be the decedent's biologically or legally adopted child without, first, now that we live in this era of DNA, definitively determining their status as the decedent's child?
Your Honor, the cases cited, the Jarkey case and also the Waverly case, point out both the common law and the statutory presumptions and policies.
That isn't responsive.
The
question is, since a DNA test is such a simple thing, it's non-intrusive, why does one set up all these hoops before you can get the DNA test?
Your Honor, the broad answer to that question is that parentage can be established in a multitude of ways without DNA testing. We don't require DNA.
But when a doubt is raised, why not just have the DNA test?
In Jarkey, they specifically address that, Your Honor. DNA will certainly scientifically prove whether someone is biologically related, but that is not the legal test. If we should have DNA in every single case, and that's not the legal precedent, that's not the legal test.
How about a reason? A reason as opposed to a precedent?
A reason, Your Honor, is because Quincy Jones is a 24-year-old man who grew up with Leonard Jones as his father.
Well, you know what's wrong with that argument? What that argument is really an argument for is that the Parentage Act should give the child the status of an adopted child, right? But for some obscure reason, it doesn't do that, and it just creates a presumption that this is the child, right?
Your Honor, the Waverly case, or excuse me, Wandry case that we cited addresses this. They say if we require DNA without a high standard, that we
I'm
create...
I'm really asking a different question. Why doesn't the Parentage Act make the child who's the heir of the parent? I mean, it seems so strange. You've decided this is the parent, but you don't, and ordinarily a child is father's heir, but it's not an heir. It's just a kind of presumptive heir. That's odd. Why not make him the heir? Has this been discussed anywhere?
I don't believe that specific point has, Your Honor.
Okay.
In the Wandry case, the district court did point out that requiring DNA testing in every case would create the unrestrained ability to posthumously disinherit someone's children. So we wouldn't want to be in a situation where anyone who makes an estate plan, anyone who leaves things to the children, even if they are legally their children only through a parentage order rather than a legal adoption, that could be undone with no substantial findings
why would parents want to use the Parentage Act rather than adoption? Because adoption would eliminate all these problems. The adopted child has
Your Honor, my presumption would be that adoption is a voluntary process. And in many situations, I can't say whether it would be in this situation.
But you had the mother signing the parentage order along with the father. So why didn't they just adopt the child?
I can't answer that, Your Honor. I can't answer that.
Would it be more expensive?
I presume so, yes.
And in terms of the DNA, because part of why I asked that is I wondered if part of the reason why that wasn't a requirement was because of the backlog in Illinois with DNA testing, the expense of DNA testing, you know, if some of those policy reasons were in play. I understand what the Illinois cases say.
And to get back to the prior question about the presumption, and it's simply a presumption from a parentage order, it's also, Your Honor, simply a presumption that the married husband of a woman who gives birth is the father. There's no legal document other than a birth certificate. It's not that they have gone through a legal adoption proceeding. That is a presumption based upon the marriage and possibly based upon a birth certificate.
What's so goofy about it, of course, because whatever the mother writes whoever the mother says the father is will be listed on the birth certificate, right? Even though apparently a significant percentage of husbands are not actually fathers, right? And
yes,
it doesn't
yes,
make
yes,
any
Honor.
Difference. It doesn't make any difference. You just whoever's name appear if the husband's name appears on the birth certificate, he's the father, isn't he? For legal purposes, even if he wasn't?
Yes, and the same applies to the mother's husband.
Right.
So these are all presumptions and different ways that parentage is created. But I think the case law is clear that especially after death, we don't undo these automatically by requiring DNA without a substantial burden. I in my last moments, Your Honor, I'd like to emphasize that from the decedent Leonard's perspective, he did not disavow Quincy as his son. He signed that parentage order. He paid child support. If he wanted his sister to take under the insurance policy, He had his entire lifetime to do that, to change that. He knew that Quincy was his son under that parentage order. He knew that he paid child support. It was his intention that Quincy certainly would...
What kind of job did he have?
He worked at a hospital, Your Honor, for many years.
He was what, an orderly or a nurse?
I believe so, Your Honor,
yes. He was an orderly hospital.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hickey, so Mr. Taylor, we'll give you another minute or so, if you want.
Thank you, Your Honors. If I may, I'd like to start off. Counsel made reference to, once again, to Jarkey and to presumptions that have been made. I submit to the court once again that Jarkey does not provide the appropriate standard because Jarkey stated that it was supporting the contention of the preservation of family, mom, dad, children. And that is not what we have in this case here, where we have basically separate families, but the Parentage Act provides for an obligation for the support of the child. When we get to the specific issue of the presumption of, in Jarkey, if a married woman has a child, then her husband is the father, that's something that the court felt was important enough that it stated that we will protect that unless there is an abundance of evidence. What we have in the Parentage Act is merely something that states, I shouldn't say merely, I apologize for that statement, because it is important to provide for the support of children, all children, regardless of whether or not their parents were married. But the issue is, the legislator wanted to protect those children, provide for them while they're children, because it specifically states to prevent them from becoming wards of the states. A 24-year-old man is not going to become a ward of the states. That is not what the intention was. That's not what was
looking to be
protected.
But then Mr. Hickey said that road leads to the posthumous disinheriting of a person. Dig him up, give him a DNA test, find, you know, he wasn't your father. And so it might be, that would be rather disturbing, wouldn't it, if you thought your rights of inheritance could be taken away long after your ancestor's death.
If I may very quickly, because
yeah,
I see I'm out of time again.
Yeah, no,
but
yeah.
my response to that would be this, Your Honor. The Parentage Act, again, deals with the support of a child. If the legislature intended for there to be some provision for collecting under an insurance policy, they could put that in. They could still modify it to do that. But they specifically talk about support of a child so that the child doesn't become a ward of the state, which doesn't really get into the issue of what happens after you're an adult, whether or not there's an insurance policy or a will or anything of that nature. It just deals with the support of children so that they don't become wards of the state. And again, I thank you very much for the additional time.
Yeah, you're very
thank
welcome.
You very much.
Thank you. Thank you to Mr.